now start with our business. We have only three items for today, as you can see them on the agenda. And we have our policy. That they appear on the agenda. And the third item is the consideration of MCOC amendment. We have amendments on the UMBAT bill that emanated from this committee. Then I think it would be fair that we must get direction from the parliamentary legal advisor as to the amendments. What does it involve? Can we get a over to you, Fred.
Good morning, sir. Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the members and the guests of the committee. Briefly, the NCOP committee that was charged with the bill proposed certain amendments to the bill. I say proposed amendments. As you see, the bill, the amendments proposed have not been effected, simply because this is a 75 bill. The NCOP say on the matter is only limited to the extent of proposing amendments. Now, it is up to this committee to then decide on those proposed amendments, whether or not to accept those amendments. The amendments have been briefly captured in the Select Committee report. The amendments basically relate to Clause 5 of the bill, which relates to the appointment of the Military Ombud and the Deputy Military Ombud. That is on page 3. You'll have to have the free version of the bill as well as the report to follow. On page 3 from line 2, what has happened is that the NCOP is proposing that on line 2, committee should take out words on the recommendation of the National Assembly. So basically what it means is that the NCOP proposes that the National Assembly should not play a role in the appointment process of the military ombud. Now on page 3, line 4, the suggestion was to remove subsections 2 and 3. subsections 2 and 3 read as follows. The National Assembly must recommend persons nominated by the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans and approved by the National Assembly by a resolution adopted with the supporting vote of a majority of its members. Due regard must be given to A, participation by the public in the nomination process, B, transparency and openness, and C, the publication of a short list of candidates for appointment. If this amendment is accepted, it will then mean that these two provisions will follow. The consequence thereof, as I indicated earlier, is the exclusion of the role of the National Assembly and its committee in the appointment process of the military ombud. There's also a proposal on page 3 from line 34 to omit subsections 9 and 10. Now, subsection 9 reads and 10 reads as follows. The ombud may be removed from office on the ground of misconduct, incapacity or incompetence. B, a finding to the effect that the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, or a finding to that effect by the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans. And C, the adoption by the National Assembly of a resolution calling for the removal of the ombud from office. This will then be a consequential amendment to the removal of the role of the National Assembly and its committee. Subsection 10, which the NCOP proposed its removal, reads as follows. The resolution of the National Assembly concerning the removal of the ombud from office must be adopted with a supporting vote of a majority of the members of the National Assembly. And the last proposed amendment is on page 3 in line 43, after the first V, to insert the ombud and the, of course, the remaining portion will remain in the bill. Now, that is in short, Chair, the proposals from your colleagues from the other house. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable members, those are the proposals. Can we have any input from yourself? Honorable Menier, Honorable Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. The document that I have before me is, of course, this document. I'm not sure if the NCOP motivated for why they proposed these amendments. If in fact they did not, then I think we should approach them and ask them to write a motivation in respect of each proposed amendment.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I don't think that is a problem, Chair. You need to. But then it goes back to the deliberations that we had in the committee. To say that the ombuds, military ombuds, it's not a section, not a sector 9, whatever. This is the work that will be done in terms of the we said it has to do na malungelo okusebenza amalunga e-SANDF, which means this still lies between the command and control of the defense. But this will then acquire this specialized unit in the defense to deal with these issues, because we might find out commanders or people that are responsible are not taking time to look into the grievances of the members of the SANDF. We did say in the deliberation that this is not a section, a sector 9. So I think I understand why the NSOP will then suggest what it has suggested, because it does make sense, James. Thank you.
Chapter 9, institution, wanted to say. There was also, I don't know as to what you're saying. You say you agree with that the NCOP should come and give further motivation. You say
I'm saying, Chair, that there is no problem with them motivating, but I think I understand from where they are coming from for them to make this suggestion.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mayor.
Chair, just really to reiterate my proposal, I mean, the NCOP have clearly deliberated, they formulated amendments, and they should have we should have the benefit through a report of understanding exactly why they proposed these amendments so that we can properly consider them.
What do members say about the proposal? Honorable Mlambo.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think I understood Honorable Daniel has agreed with Honorable Maynard that she doesn't have a problem with the motivation being made by the NCOP. So I also emphasize that I agree that they will receive the motivation and then we consider the amendment. Thank you. But we understand where this thing comes from. Thank you, Chair.
Then if that is the feeling of the Honorable Member, we'll call the NCOP to give us further motivation and we'll look into this amendment again next week, Tuesday. Will that be fine with Honorable Members?
Yes,
fine. Then we move to item number 4, Revision of Draft Report for Submission to the Presidential Review of State Audit Committee. Honorable members, I take it that the report has been circulated to us. Honorable Daniel?
Chair, just in terms of process, I mean, our committee has the benefits of a great committee secretary in Mandy Bali, but through no fault of hers, this is the first time that I'm seeing this report. I just would like you to know that. Obviously, I received the report on email, but I tend to deal with documents formally when they arrive in my pigeonhole. Through, I think, probably a difficulty with the service officers, this morning is the first time that I see this report official. I'd just like you to know that. I have asked the committee secretary if she would look into the matter and try and tighten up in respect of the service officers.
Okay, that will be arranged with the second time. Professor?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members and other colleagues. This report is in response to a request from the Presidential Review Committee on State-Owned Enterprises. And they basically just requested that we should indicate which state-owned entities report to the portfolio committee and just basically explain the funding and then some of the concerns that the committee has with the different state entities. As you can see there in the introduction, the PFMA indicates that there's basically two state entities reporting to the portfolio committee. That is now AMSCO and the Castle Control Board. There is a third one, the NEL, but as you know, they actually report to the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises. But there is an initiative to actually get the NEL back into the defense ministry. So there, the last section I just referred to the NEL, and the recommendation there is basically that the NEL should then come and brief the committee, you know, on the negotiations to reposition them as soon as possible. With regards to Arms Corps and the castle, you will note that most of the information is derived from the annual report of both Arms Corps and the castle. On page 1, you will see they refer basically to Arms Corps, the Act, which establishes 2.1, just the kind of funding and where Arms Corps gets its funding from. And then on page 2 at the top, there is some of the concerns that has been noted by the committee and also in the annual report. More important is the recommendation that the committee has to consider there on page 2, number 2.3. And the first recommendation there is that the appointment of a CEO should be concluded as soon as possible. Secondly, the conceptual framework for the repositioning of Arms Corps should be finalized and implemented in order to improve the relationship between Arms Corps and DoD. Members would recall that there's always been an issue that the relationship between the Department of Defense Military Veterans and Arms Corps has not been optimal. And several times we've indicated that that relationship should actually be improved. The third recommendation relates to training, especially of historically disadvantaged personnel, and that should be prioritized to fill the scarce skill vacancies, and the BBBE targets should also be pursued aggressively. So those are the three recommendations with regards to Arms Corps that the committee should consider. With regards to the Castle Control Board, once again, just the Act that establishes 3.1, just how the Castle is funded, and then the concerns as derived from the annual report. If one looks then at the recommendations specifically, the first one there is the reinvestment of head bucket revenue into the Castle should be prioritized. Members would recall that head bucket is basically a venue there. It's being rented out. They have many functions there, and there's a lot of revenue generated there. And that money has not been plowed back into the castle. As we all know, the castle is actually struggling with sufficient funds to maintain it properly. And now this money has been flowing back, you know, I think it's to the army support base in Yangtze rather than back into the coffers of the castle. So there's an initiative then to make sure that the revenue that is accrued at the castle can actually be plowed back into the castle for maintenance purposes. And then there's still the problem with the appointment of a CEO as well as a COO, and that needs to be resolved as soon as possible. And then the third recommendation there is just that a proper strategic plan should be drawn up as a matter of urgency. Okay, that concludes my brief presentation with regards to, and as said, with regards to the NEL, they are not quite, you know, in under under the ministry, so they should just basically come and tell us what's the progress to reposition the NEL.
Thank you very much, Mr. Daniels. Honorable Daniels? From Daniel to Daniel.
Chen, on page 2.2, on the concern, on 2.3. On 2.3, we're saying on the recommendation that the appointment of the CEO should be concluded as soon as possible. But on 2.2, we're saying the former chief. Chief Executive Officer was suspended. We're not saying was chucked out or was expelled. Then can you please clarify that? Because we're talking suspension, not expulsion. So before we can appoint another CEO, we must finalize that one first so that when we send this recommendation, it must be on a clear basis as to that one is out. And now we're talking of a new CEO.
Thank you for that, ma'am. I think the point I tried to illustrate is that the appointment of a new CEO has been coming on for a very long time, and that is now since 19 November 2009. I think maybe we should just conclude this sentence by saying that eventually he has been, his services have been terminated. So I think that just needs to be added to the sentence.
Honorable Minister.
As I said, I received this document this morning, and it's my first real opportunity to have a careful look at it. I'd like to thank Peter for producing it, and there's certainly large parts of the report with which I do not disagree. And for example, fast-tracking and ensuring that the CEO of Arms Corps is appointed as soon as possible, I think there can be no disagreement with that, especially given what we read in the newspapers, that a civil war is once again likely to break out at Arms Corps. But aside from that, Chair, I would like an opportunity to properly read this report and give you written comments, because on at least two issues, I think I might differ with other members of the committee. In respect of Arms Corps, I think what we seriously need to look at is whether Arms Corps is in fact, as an entity, is necessary. It is the primary acquisition arm of the Defence Force, and I would like to understand exactly why it is necessary to have a separate entity. The question here is, why could those functions, which essentially are specialised project management functions in respect of acquiring big capital equipment for primarily the Defence Force, why could those functions not be subsumed into the department? We could then get rid of the chairperson and the board of Arms Corps, who spend more time travelling to air shows and spending millions of rands than actually seemingly doing their job at Arms Corps. So that's a big picture. Then when it comes to Danel, I would have a preference for privatising Danel.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lenier. Honourable Mlambo.
Thank you, Chair. Can honourable member repeat his last sentence about privatisation of the land? I didn't hear him properly, thank you.
He says he wants Canal to be privatised. He prefers.
Honourable
Daniel.
Chair, seeing that government has become a cash cow for Danel. Government is putting money into Danel, that which is not making it back. So if the honourable member is suggesting that Danel be privatised, and just how is it going to be able to make money? Why is it that it's still dependent on government? Wouldn't it be better for it to come under the Department of Defense, so that when we rescue it, we know that we'll make that money back to the coffers of government and the department? And besides the fact, I think on the recommendation that Mr. Daniels has made in terms of what is this committee are recommending to the presidential review on these state-owned entities, is that Danel is very critical to the Department of Defense, not to where it's reporting at the moment, or it's falling under at the moment.
Okay.
Because it's managed, and its core business is with, it rests with the Department of Defense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other input, Honorable Media? Honorable Mkakadeli, you follow.
Chair, there are really two issues. The one is, where the Donnell falls. Would it fall under DPE or DOD? The other is whether it should be privatized or partially privatized. I mean, I've expressed myself on the partial privatization or privatization of Donnell. The fact is, if you look at Donnell, there are several business units. The business units that work and are actually profitable are those that have been partially privatized. The Zeiss Optronics is a successful business unit. Donnell Saab Aerostructures, for example, is a very unsuccessful business unit. It will cost the taxpayer, I think, this year 700 million rand. So I think we should look at that. As to where the entity falls, we'd have to debate this. But, I have no confidence in the Department of Defense managing a public entity. No confidence whatsoever. All the evidence suggests that DOD could probably manage it at least less well than DPE.
Any other input, Honorable Mm-hmm. Honorable Mkabadele?
Thank you. I think we're coming with, I'm hearing the members, we're coming with a conclusion. I wish we can hear these negotiations that are on paragraph 4. The Tenere report, the portfolio committee, the last paragraph. These negotiations have been going on and on and on. If we can hear those negotiations, then we can conclude and decide whether it can be privatized, whether it can fall on us. But these negotiations, we are not part of these negotiations. We don't know what is going on with these negotiations. Can we get an opportunity to hear about the content of these negotiations? Because we'll hear more facts once we hear those negotiations, whether it should fall, whether it should privatize, whether it should come to us. But I want to agree with Honorable Daniel. It is much more talking about ourselves than, but we are not part of these negotiations, and I'm finding it as if we are being deprived of making any decision when we don't know how far these negotiations are going and who is there to negotiate and what is it that they are negotiating. Thank you.
Would the Honorable Members want to have a briefing on the progress as far as negotiations are concerned? Is that what with the feeling of Honorable Members? Okay. Look, then, in that case, we will not adopt this report today, and then we'll wait for the department to come and brief us on the progress as far as negotiations are concerned. So the department will take heed of that. Honorable Minister.
Chair, I would support such a briefing. I would also be interested in, and I don't know how this would be done, getting a perspective from the department about why in fact Arms Corps as an entity needs to exist, why its key core competencies cannot be subsumed into the Department of Defense.
Fine. The briefing should be why AMSCO should continue existing as an entity.
What is the Minister suggesting? I understand you are saying in the briefing they should tell us why AMSCO should continue to exist as an entity. I don't know what you mean by that. What are you suggesting? Are you suggesting that what are you suggesting about AMSCO?
I'm suggesting that Arms Corps has a core competence, and that core competence is acquisition of capital equipment primarily for the Defence Force. My we obviously require that core competence. My question is, why can that core competence not be subsumed into the Department of Defense under the acquisition department and the entity, the Arms Corps entity, because it's a public entity, why can that not be gotten rid of?
You answered the question. Thank you very much. We were supposed to submit this report to the office of the chairperson by the 8th of March, but in the light of what the honorable members have raised, we'll simply request that we'll submit it later. So that you must have a full briefing of what. Thank you very much. Can we move to item 5, the consideration of the program of strategic planning workshop, 16-17 March. I gather that the report has been circulated, the program has been circulated to all members. Do members have any input to make? Any addition, any subtraction, multiple deletion?
Chair, I support the and have supported the idea of a workshop, and I support much of the agenda. I've really got two questions. Is it necessary for this committee to travel to Arniston? That's the first question. Second question, what is the total budget for the strategic workshop? And third, what are the key outcomes that we're looking for? That's really what I'd be interested in. That's a question to you, Chair.
Look, that's why we call it strategic workshop. When we call it strategic workshop, is because we want to answer those questions that you are answering. I expect honorable members to provide answers to those questions once we are in a strategic workshop. Honorable Nabo.
Thank you, honorable Chair. At least there is a positive support of Honorable Member Maynard. He agrees that we need to have a workshop. I don't know the budgetary matters, where do they come from, because he's actually saying, yes, I agree with the workshop. Thank you.
Honorable
Thanks, Jay. You answered my third question, but my first two questions, is it really necessary to go to Arniston, and what is the total budget for this trip? I'd be interested to hear.
Honorable Dennis.
Chair, in terms of budget, I think all committees are budgeted for to do the work of their committee and the department. And I think that budget is there for us to use it. Of course, not for the sake of using it, but also to get out of here and be able to be focused on the business at hand, to have a strategy as this committee and the intended outcomes of that which we'll be discussing in the strategic plan, so that we're able to effectively do our oversight over the department and make sure that we come out with the outcome that we would like to see as this committee, as Parliament, and as the people. Thank you, Chair.
The cost will be made available for us to us in the a later date, and indeed, I would record that there is a budget for this, and must just take it up from there. Honorable Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. I look forward to receiving that total amount. As I say, I do support the strategic workshop, but I'd like to be on record that I do not support this committee travelling to Honiston for the purposes of that workshop. We could easily have this workshop in Parliament, and I think we would then save our people some money.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as the other members have already alluded that all committees have a budget. Now, this budget is allocated. What is the meaning of having a budget and you don't spend on it? At the end of the day, it's going to be a problem again if this committee doesn't, this committee is underspending. And this is for us. It's a developmental program for this committee so that we can do our oversight to this department. So I agree and second the notion of that we are going out to have a strategic planning. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mabega, Honourable Meni, Honourable Isau.
Chair, I'm really just simply expressing a preference. If we are going to spend money, let's spend it on our core competence, which is oversight, and not strategic workshops.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think the committee does have an oversight that is the major role it has to play. I'm just reiterating as well, and that's where most of the money should actually be spent. On the strategic planning and workshops and briefings, Parliament is quite huge, and the time it's being held is over the almost a recess period. There's nothing really happening. And also, we've got other spheres of government that have facilities available in this province, throughout this province, that can be used. And there's an understanding that we can use that facility and there will be minimal cost attached to it. So I think the options we should consider and save the money more for actual oversight work to be done.
Honorable Mlambo, you wanted to say something?
Thank you. I think Honorable Daniels and Honorable Mappel, I've put it very clear. Well, it's up to members, I believe, who can debate this matter. But if they feel that there are many facilities around Western Cape that can be utilized, I think the bookings have been made, isn't it, Honorable Chair? If I may ask.
Honorable Meng, but do we agree with the program? Apart from where you hold the workshop, we just need 12 facilities. There is no way that you should, in fact, there is no way that you can run your program without having a strategic planning workshop. Every structure must have that part of the whole process. The concerns will be noted, and the workshop will go on as it is arranged. Thank you, Honorable Members. There are documents which are going to be distributed here. You remember in the last piece we talked about the Law Commission report. You'll get it. It talks about acts which have to be repealed, and also a document on outstanding responses. The members should make sure that when they leave this house, they have all those reports. Thank you very much. We don't have any other business, and that brings us to item 7, that our meeting will be adjourned. Thank you very much, Honorable Members.
Thank you.
Thank you.